Welcome to House of Comments. I'm Charlotte Henry, and I'm not going to hand over the mic. I'm going to abuse the mic. So congratulations, writer and director Emma Bennell, on another successful play. This was in Milton Keynes, so I didn't get a chance to see it, but it was called Four Weddings and a Funeral, which I think is a fantastic title.
Thank you so much.
It made me laugh when I saw, when you told me what it had been called. You were over in Milton Keynes, weren't you? A festival there for a couple of hours, and it all went fantastically well.
Yeah, I was really, really pleased with it. The audience were incredibly receptive, and not just my lovely, lovely Slimming World group who came en masse, which was so nice of them.
Oh, that's incredible.
You know, Milton Keynes is quite a long way from Walthamstow, so for them to come along was
incredibly
supportive and sweet. My cast were brilliant. It was so lovely to work with them. I felt a little bit sorry for Emily, who, a fabulous actress, but she was 23 and the rest of us were in our 40s, 50s. And we were all talking about the menopause just the whole time. Poor Emily sat there going, "You're all just terrifying me now." But it was lovely. And it was a festival of women's writing. It was my first ever commissioned piece, which was, you know, just feels like a real step as a playwright.
Amazing, yeah.
My first piece outside of London, which again, very exciting. And yeah, we made people cry, which is always kind of and laugh. So
Perfect.
That's kind of what you want to do as a playwright. So
well, I've definitely laughed in your place. I don't know if I've cried yet.
I don't think I've written anything this sad before, to be fair.
I definitely have laughed during your work before. In the right places, I should say.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I'm really chuffy. I'm really proud of you. I have a very multi-talented co-host. So you're back now. We're back engaged in politics. It's a funny week, isn't it? You and I were sort of plotting the show as we do, going sort of, it's quite a lot has happened, but also like, it's just been a funny week. Right? There's not been big political breakthrough stories. Perhaps for some reason, that's why we're going to slightly start with foreign affairs, actually.
Well, and also, I mean, as you probably know from the fact that I haven't been that responsive on text, whereas I'm normally straight away, I've been living like a normal person this week and not really been following the news. I've been in a rehearsal room. You know, the rehearsal etiquette says you absolutely do not pick up your phone while people are performing and you're directing them.
No, you don't pick up your phone. And you had a nice, you actually had some fresh air and a walk.
Yes. So the first half of the week, the reason I wasn't on the podcast last week is I was walking in Devon with my best friend, Emma. I'm not referring to myself in the third person. I do actually have another friend who's called Emma.
Wow.
and we did some of the hardest walking we've ever done. My thighs were really
okay. No,
when I got home on Sunday.
No,
that's not a sex thing. It's a genuine, like, oh my god, that was hard work, body magic thing.
So moving on from Emma's thighs, this is the most.
How can you?
This is the most terrible segue I'm ever going to have to do, and I'm furious at you. Right. Pause. Middle East. Huge. Genuinely huge, I think, news coming from the Middle East yesterday that Israeli forces had killed the head of Hamas, Yahya Sinwar, who was understood to be the mastermind of the October 7th atrocities. It's a huge moment, I think, just because it shows once again Israel has the ability to decapitate these terrorist organisations, take them out from the top. My other hope is it's a big moment because it allows a shift in dynamic. Israel has been clear from the start, from October the 7th, October the 8th, whatever you'd like want to call it, from when it started, you know, when it responded to those attacks, that the two objectives were to do, you know, to stop Hamas as a military force and to bring back the hostages. Now, I've always cared, and this is the luxury of living in London, not a border community in Israel. For me, my heart has always been worrying about the hostages more. But I think if I lived in Israel and I'd had a year of rocket sirens and torment and friends in the military and all of that, I would feel somewhat differently. But I'm going to this point because I say my hope with the death of Sinwar, I hope Israel can say now in Gaza that is one of our key military objectives achieved. And therefore we now that absolutely must demand the release of the hostages. That inevitably is some kind of negotiation that involves some Palestinian prisoners being released. I would imagine I can't see any circumstances in which that doesn't happen. But I am desperate that those hostages, whoever is still alive, is released. Did I tell you that when I was in Israel a few weeks ago, which you knew, and did I tell you I went to what's called Hostage Square in Tel Aviv?
You did. You talked about it, I think, on the podcast. It was very
Yeah, and
moving.
I still haven't been able to get out of my head this constructed tunnel in the middle of the square in Tel Aviv, where they sort of reconstruct what they think the tunnels in Gaza are like, with boots and gunshots and everything overhead. And I haven't been able to get it out of my head. So I'm just, my way of pointing this out is I'm just desperate that Israel use the death of Sinwar as a way to refocus on the hostages, and hopefully that moves everything on to a next phase. That is what I would desperately hope. Now, Benjamin Netanyahu, obviously, with this, the revolting people he has in his government
I mean,
alongside
this
him.
is the problem. Well, there are many, many, many problems, and this whole thing just feels so intractable. I think it wouldn't be right not to, having absolutely rightly mentioned the feelings of those in Israel who feel under attack every day, to also mention the feelings of those in Gaza, who have been displaced and have been bombed and killed as well. Both sides are suffering horrifically from decisions made by leaderships,
Well, but the decision
and
made by Sinwar to attack, absolutely.
the decision made by Sinwar to attack, the strategy then imposed by Netanyahu as a result of that attack. As I mean, I've said to you many, many times, I think Israel absolutely had the right to respond. It's then how you respond and
Well,
how that is played out
look, there's an
that that.
interesting point here that this, we're not going to do a Rory Stewart, Alistair Campbell, pretend we're a foreign policy podcast, but there is an interesting thing that someone else I'd love to get into is this is a very un-Israeli war. Israeli wars tend to be very, very quick. They tend to win and they tend to win quickly. And this has been very attritional.
Yes, and I think that at least in part that comes back to the politics rather than the military strategy.
Well, and
Because
that's.
I don't think Netanyahu wants the war to end, because I think he very much sees his political career ending when the war ends, and he doesn't want that.
Well, I mean, there's huge issues. Well, I think he fears that if the war ends and he's removed from office, he'll end up in prison, basically.
Well, also, I mean that's a very good incentive for him not to end a war. And unfortunately, when that kind of decision is in not the hands of one person necessarily, but certainly what that person is a key player in it, and then has brought in other people who have reasons not to end the war, such as
Ben
Ben-Gvir,
But anyway,
etc.
I wanted to bring all this up just to say that was my hope, and I was a bit despondent again to wake up and hear on the news that Netanyahu said there is not a shift. Well, actually, I really think if anything can be a shifting moment,
This should be it.
this really should be it. That's my.
I agree, and I just, for all sorts of reasons, I would like to see this whole conflagration come to an end. I mean, I don't think anybody wants this to continue. It's how it comes to an end, what that end looks like, how we move from this phase to the next phase, what the next phase is for both sides. Where is the compromise? Where is the ability and willingness to compromise on both sides? Where is the security for Israelis? Where is the security for Palestinians? Where is the security for Lebanon? All of this are far more intractable and complex questions than really anybody. Well, not anybody, I suppose,
But you
but
and I.
most of, but you're the average punter on the street who has, strong opinions about what's happening either way, can really kind of delve into.
And of course, that doesn't even take us the further step back to the bigger question of Iran's influence on all of this, which is clearly what the key factors in, particularly Hezbollah and in Lebanon. And I guess that does lead us slightly nicely, much better than our previous segue, we talk about Iran, but also obviously another big power player in the world, China. And Foreign Secretary David Lammy has flown out to China.
He has, and will be having discussions, not with Xi Jinping, I think, but with the Chinese foreign, whatever, foreign
Sure.
minister, whose name I'm afraid completely escapes me because as I have been out of the loop for a week and have menopause brain. I mean, again, this is another one of, foreign policy is one of those areas where people who care about it tend to think very black and white, and people engaged in it have to deal in shades of grey all the time. And that disconnect between the people who are most passionate and the people who are most active
Yes.
is incredibly hard to manage politically.
Yes, because there'd be people that would say, oh, you should completely disengage with China, boycott China, it's a malign influence on the world, blah, blah, blah. When.
It's a malign influence on the world. It has massive human rights abuses.
Now, all of that is true, but that doesn't get away from the reality
That
that
they are a big player in the world
you
stage.
still
And
have to do some level of engagement.
exactly. And that is incredibly complex. And I think it's probably more complex for the Labour Party than it was for the Conservatives, although the Conservatives had their complexities over China in particular.
Yes, they did. Because there was a very strident China group. I don't, anti-China doesn't feel
Well,
quite
there
the
was a
right phrase.
very, very strident, I would say, anti-China group, that were almost a response to Cameron
Yes.
Osborne's full embrace of China.
China, yes. It was certainly a, I don't, yes, there was a certain, was certain anti-diplomatic was concerns with China, hugely concerned with China in both terms of security, etc. We saw that actually a story I reported on years ago with the Huawei stuff. It's a huge issue.
But coming back to Labour,
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you.
it's, I
What's your
mean,
take?
the Labour Party will always tear itself apart over foreign policy.
Sure.
It is the issue which most is most likely to animate Labour infighting. There are other issues, welfare in particular, but foreign policy is always the one. I mean, and you can think right back to the 80s and nuclear disarmament. You can think back to Iraq,
Rock,
obviously.
yeah.
And again, it comes down to that difference between the idealism that makes somebody care enough to join a political party.
Particularly party of the left.
A particularly a party. Well, I'm sure conservative. I wouldn't say that conservatives aren't idealistic. They have different ideals from me, but
Sure, I'm just talking
they
in
have.
foreign policy terms. I think
But
there
in
is a.
I think that's absolutely right. But and then the realpolitik of running a G7 economy, and what that means in terms of your position with in an imperfect world.
And being, of course, in David Lammy's case, the chief diplomat of that G7 economy. Now, I have to say, I suspect you're going to tell me off for this, but it's fine. I think David Lammy has looked a bit out of his depth since coming into the Foreign Office. I'm not sure who I could recommend that would be better. Well, anyway.
So I'm interested. I'm not going to tell you off. I'm going to ask you why you think that. But what is it that's given you that impression?
I just don't think he has said or done very much that's particularly. Look, let's start from the beginning, which is he has stepped into a hell of a international situation. You wouldn't almost wish your worst enemy to be a foreign secretary of a major country at this moment. I mean, wars in Ukraine and Russia, China, Iran, war in the Middle East. It's about everything possible on the shit list you could get, right, if you're a foreign secretary. So I give that as fair context. I think you need a really big hitter to do those gigs. I'm not sure I've seen anything from David Lammy that shows he is up to that. I think
So
there are.
I think I'm going to push back ever so slightly on two fronts, I
Please.
think. And I'm not saying this because I'm a massive like Lammy head. I don't know if such a thing exists, but
It does now.
I think firstly, he's only been there for a few months, so I'm not sure what the big thing that he could have done that would have made you go, oh, he's it has been. And the second thing is the fact that there hasn't been a big mistake is actually kind of the best you can hope for being foreign secretary under the circumstances as you described.
Yeah, I mean, no big mistake is certainly a good starting point. Again, I'm not sure who I think there are jobs in government, quite big jobs in government, that David Lammy probably could do very, very well. I'm not entirely convinced yet that foreign secretary is one of them. I can't pretend to be enough of an expert in the Labour front bench and their nuances and to know that who would be somewhat better. I just when I've seen him speaking and getting involved doing this, it seems very sort of lines to take, not with the depth and nuance. Remember, he shadowed this as well. I would expect there to be a bit more punch from what he's saying and doing.
Oh,
But
I think the absolute opposite.
fair enough.
I think the last thing we want right now is a punchy foreign secretary. I think that lines to take means that his civil servants are probably incredibly happy with the job he's doing.
Yeah.
Because he might be the chief diplomat in terms of the front facing, but the diplomatic corps are the ones actually having the relationships and building them on the ground. And I think that not causing news is probably the most they want from a foreign secretary right now.
I mean, I will be very interested to see how he does in China.
Yeah,
Because I
I
think
think
that's
this
a
is
first.
probably the first big test. Obviously, he's been to the States, he's been to Europe. He's done quite a lot of shuttle diplomacy. I think he's been to Ukraine. But this is the first kind of huge summit type test. So we shall see how that goes. But I think if he comes through this and he hasn't made news, I'd call that a win.
Yeah, I think it's fair enough to slightly give a bit of, use this as a sort of the first real test. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it pays out. Well, they've got a lot going on, and I guess we're going to jump to Taylor Swift now, obviously.
God.
Sir Keir Starmer had met, and his wife, I believe, met Sir Keir Starmer after the
I don't think Keir Starmer met Keir Starmer. I think he met Taylor
Taylor
Swift.
Swift after her performance at Wembley Stadium. They were there for about 10 minutes. And this is all it's turned out after there was organised a special guide, to Taylor Swift to get to the stadium, police guards and all sorts. This is an interesting one, right? Because I actually have no problem with Theresa May being protected in that way. There had been concerts cancelled because of death threats. The threats were real. I have no particular problem with her being protected whilst here. I don't also have particular, if she goes to the concert, okay, goes to the concert. But I think what's happened here is that it's all this ticket stuff has become, and the clothes and the glasses, it's all become such a mess that these things are all becoming a thing now. Does that
Yeah,
make
so
sense?
yeah, I think it does make sense. I think there are bits of this story that are a story, and there are bits of this story that are not a story. And the problem is that disaggregating those two things sounds like you're making excuses for the bit that are absolutely a story. The glasses, Wahid Ali's past, those things are absolutely, things that I think that it's totally reasonable to criticize Starmer on. So him being highest on the freebies list is a bit weird. If I were someone who'd gone into Parliament with the clear intention of becoming leader of my party, I would not have taken that many freebies. I just wouldn't, because I'd have had the political nous to know what it looks like, even if it's not breaking any rules. On the other hand, the problem now is what that did was open the floodgates, and all sorts of nonsense are coming then through it. So as I understand it, Taylor Swift's tour in England added something like 1% to our GDP for
Something like
those
that,
months. So, yeah, I'm okay with her getting security, having had such significant threats in Austria. They had to cancel the concerts. But and I'm also okay with someone, the Prime Minister going to meet one of the frankly most powerful voices in the world for 10 minutes after her show.
It's a
That's not it just it doesn't feel like a story to me. And I think there are two dangers in this. The first is for well, maybe three dangers. First is for the Labour Party, and the most significant is for the Labour Party looking like they're all the same, they're doing the same as the Tories. I think there's an argument. A good argument that could be made that they're not, and these were all declared, and a lot of the problems with Johnson in particular was his lack of willingness to declare his freebies. But it doesn't smell right. And anyone with a decent nous in politics should have known that this wouldn't pass the sniff test. The second is for the media, who are in danger of just falling into, well, having felt fallen into the habit of treating all of these things the same, not actually giving them the difference of nuance that they deserve, and just kind of falling into a lazy cliche of they're all the same. And the third and the biggest, the most longest running one is for democracy, really, where if you are an ordinary member of the public who's not paying much attention, which I was this week, I can tell you that my cast are not particularly political people. And the one story they'd heard about this week was Taylor Swift. Right? Okay. But that was a choice made by journalists. That was a choice made by news bulletin schedulers. And is it the most important thing that's happened in our country this week? And I so the reason I started with the Labour Party is because I have critiques over this, and I don't want to sound like I'm making excuses and that suddenly I'm reacting differently to this kind of story than I would have done had it been under the Tories. But I do worry that the nuance, the difference, the importance has been lost a bit. And I worry about the longer term impact that has both on political journalism and on the way that the public view politics.
But I think some of that's fair, but I also think you've sort of, they played into her hands at this, right? This
Which is why I started with them. They have allowed this to happen in two ways. First of all, they didn't have the nous not to take a load of freebies. And second of all, there's been a bit of a news vacuum. And so that's been filled by nonsense stories.
So Keir Starmer is rich enough to buy his own suit and glasses and clothing for his wife. To take those things is, take money for those, which is what started this.
Yeah, and also I like, but no designer gear's nice than that, and it's usually pretty good quality. But I'm not sure, frankly, that the quality is thousands of pounds more than a decent suit from Ross Bros or M&S. And I think wear a nice suit from M&S like the public do is fine.
Probably, yeah. I just think this is a bit of a mess that they've sort of dug themselves into. Obviously, Taylor Swift is always a big superstar. You could argue that if Taylor Swift didn't want to see them, it wouldn't happen, right? You know,
Yeah,
this was.
exactly. I think she probably has more control over her backstage than the Prime Minister does.
For sure. But I think it's got a bit messy. And I think it's a bit indicative of how, over the 3 months or so, that they haven't quite
They
got
haven't gripped
control
it
and.
yet. Yeah, I think that's an absolutely fair criticism. We sh So we've talked before about honeymoons and my lack of belief in them. But I
Yes, I had
do.
to apologize when Claire was on last week. I had to make the point on your behalf.
Thank you very much. I heard that. I, but I do, there is a question as to whether this is teething troubles or whether it's endemic. If it's teething troubles, it's not a big problem. They'll get over it. They'll get into it. They'll start running the government in a better way. If there is an endemic problem with their lack of ability to manage these things, that is a longer term problem. And I think that we will only see over time.
Before we go, I will ask you then the question that I discussed last week, which is, what's your take on Sue Gray leaving? Just 30 seconds.
Aren't there? And I don't know, honestly, I think the truth probably lies somewhere in between them. Either she was taking far too much control over too many things and therefore not delivering very well, or she was bullied out by a boys' club. Both can be true at the same time, frankly. The truth probably lies somewhere in the middle, but ultimately a decision had to be made. It was clearly untenable that there was these two centres of power fighting each other rather than getting on with the job. I think that now, sometimes I think people in politics should be slightly careful what they wish for, because it's all on Morgan now. Now,
Morgan McSweeney.
if he can deliver, great, brilliant. I have quite a lot of time for Morgan McSweeney's agenda, actually. His critique of the Blair government is the same as my critique of the Blair government. So those calling him a Blairite, I find quite bizarre, because he's really not. But I do, where he is Blairite is more in the party management side and these
Sure.
Stalinistic tendencies, as it has been referred to me by more than one MP. So can he learn to manage people in a way that isn't about exercising his power over them? That I think will be an important thing for him to learn to do, because ultimately that works for as long as it works, and then it really doesn't, because you don't have engender loyalty.
Yeah.
Some people are incredibly loyal to him. I think it now falls solely and squarely on his shoulders, and that can be a blessing if it works and a curse if it doesn't. That is my ultimate take.
Well, we will keep our eyes on it. Thank you so much for joining us here on House of Comments. Of course, you can join both of us individually as well. Where are you, Emma?
You can find my newsletter, Hard Thinking on the Soft Left, on Substack, and I'm on most social medias as Emma Bunnell underscore, or just Emma Bunnell, depending on how quickly I got there and whether I got there before the girl in Leeds.
I'm at Charlotte A. Henry across social media, and theaddition.net is where I blog. You can sign up to my newsletter there and hear extra podcast episodes. Of course, the best way to get everything from us is go to patreon.com/houseofcomments. You can sign up for just £5 a month there. You get all the paid versions of our newsletters, extra podcast episodes of here, and our undying love, really. So I guess,
Absolutely.
so I don't know what else you want.
I mean, what
Well,
more can we give you, blood?
yeah, well, don't suggest that. Sorry, patreon.com/houseofcommentspodcast is what will get you there.
Although
We've
people should blood not to us.
and we're doing we'll do some special paid episodes as well. So get all of that there, and well, we'll see you very soon. We'll see you next week.